and welcome to the Mobcast. I am your host, Aaron Thomas, an editor at bitmob.com. It's four topics, four gamers, and a community question. Actually, we've got a couple community questions this week.
That's right.
Because Damien loves the community. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Doubling up.
Damien doesn't like coming up with his own topic.
That could also be it.
Either way, we have a lot of community stuff, and we're pounding vitamin water here today, so I think it'll be an extra special one. I'm going to be really focused because I have kiwi strawberry.
I'm going to be lots of endurance from me.
All right.
I've got revive, so at some point I should probably sound a little more lively than I do now.
Damien, what do you got?
I'm just going to be as amped up as I always am, bouncing off the walls.
What are you drinking,
can't
though?
Can't stop me.
Power C.
Power C. What the hell does that do for you?
I don't know. It perks me up.
I guess we'll find out. All right, so I'll hand out my topic here first, and then we'll go around the room and introduce our topics. It's almost the end of the year, and that means game of the year for everybody out there in this industry. And I want to know what you guys think about Game of the Year awards. Like them, hate them, too many, too few. And if you have any interesting Game of the Year voting experiences or stories to tell, now I guess would be a good time to tell them. Maybe not this second, but when we get to my topic, that would be a good time to tell them.
I already know how you feel about this topic.
No spoilers. Damien, you want to go ahead with
my topic yours? Is actually from community member Daniel Sims, who asks, have you ever killed a game with perfectionism? Have you ever gotten so good at a game that you become a perfectionist at it and would restart or rage quit when you made even the slightest screw up? The last time I played through Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, I beat it on hard without killing anyone, knocking out anyone, or even being seen. After that, I couldn't play it anymore because I had to be that good.
Jason Wilson, who has been hard at work at many things this holiday season, working, family life, not sleeping, which is why you got the vitamin water.
And
what's going on?
I've had a whole pot of coffee today. I don't think it's really helped. you know, with all the emphasis nowadays on HD visuals and mature storytelling, I don't see much talk about fun in video games anymore. And I just wanted to know if anyone else has noticed
this. You never read a message board forum. People don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Fun is so over. Our fourth guest, who is rapidly racking his brain for a topic.
I got like 10 seconds now, right? Oh, I've got one. It's kind of...
Well, they don't even know who the hell you are.
Oh, okay.
Will you introduce me then? They probably do.
You think they know the voice?
You think so?
I don't know. I've been off the air for a while.
It is James Bond.
Welcome.
Oh, welcome to the podcast, Mr. Bond. Actually, it's John Davison, who you guys... Did I call you Davison or Davidson? I called you Davison, right?
Yeah, you did it right.
Good, I didn't screw it up.
But then you ruined it.
And then I ruined it.
Yeah, I'm not going to speak to you now.
I'm such a perfectionist, I suck.
Fuck you, Aaron. Fuck you, I'm out of here.
All right, that was quick. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys
next week. Take long for the first curse word.
Yeah, that was a hell of a topic right there. So John Davison, formerly of EGM and... Now, currently of GamePro, took time out of relaunching this magazine to hang out with us give us vitamin water.
Yes. And this beautiful room that I didn't know we had. We have a podcast room at GamePro. I'm thinking maybe we should start using it soon. So I want to do the 2009 pile of shame, because it dawned on me while you were talking about fun that I have a big pile of fun that I've been meaning to... get to and just haven't got around to it. And I'm actually spending a lot of time playing something that I don't think I'm having fun with, but I'm just sort of, and it's related to Damien's topic, which I'm sort of angry playing.
All right. And after that's done, we're going to have, just break it down a little bit, just have a little World Cup talk here, England against the United States, your predictions on that, how that's going to go and how you're going to take that out on the people in the office here.
You predict that?
how humiliated are you guys going to be after we take it to you once the World Cup?
Oh, really? Yeah.
I mean, are people here going to be like calling in sick the next day because they don't want to be around you?
Just in case. Yeah, they don't want to get...
You know. Or will you not come in because of the celebration?
If the U.S. beats England, I may have to stay at home, yeah.
All right. I'm liking our chances. You know, we're getting better, and any team's got to rely on Wayne Rooney.
The thing with the England team is it's like being a 49ers fan. Like, any game that doesn't matter, they're great. But the closer you get to something that actually means something is when they go to pieces.
Well, and that's
so early round game England, they'll kick your ass. But if they get into quarterfinals later on, that's when they'll go to pieces.
So I figured maybe we get them early and they'll take us a little lightly. I don't know. I think
if they lose to the U.S., they're not going to be. I don't think any of them will be allowed back in the country.
That's true.
Well, you know, I was living in England when that infamous Beckham moment when he kicked that guy. Was it? I think it was playing against Argentina.
Yeah.
And it was a wild night in the pub. People were very upset.
I think it's hilarious that the guy who actually used to work in sports has nothing to add to a soccer conversation.
We'll break down Group B later on in the show. And next week's going to be Group A and D. Who wants to go first? Who's feeling it? Whose vitamin water is working for him?
I'll take it off.
Go for it.
Kick it off. Let's stay with the soccer lingo here.
Yeah, keep it on, please. But kick it off.
You know, in all these articles and conversations and message board posts about Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed 2 and all these big games of the fall, the only game I've seen where anyone's actually talked about fun has been Mario Brothers. And I've just been thinking, you know, with all these new emphasis on visuals that continues to grow every year, with the new emphasis on more mature, engaging storylines, what's happened to fun? Do you guys have fun with all these games?
Not all the time. And I think as a reviewer, that can be tough. I read a lot of reviews now and look at them differently now that I'm not really writing as many reviews. It feels like sometimes they're looking at the technical aspects because that's what you can quantify. You can say these graphics are fantastic and the frame rate is solid and you know, it's an amazing sounding game and you can point to those things, but the fun thing is more subjective. And I think sometimes people are scared to.
Is this a question about games coverage or is it a question about community attitude? Are you talking about people or are you talking about the press?
I'm talking about people.
Okay.
More than I am about the press.
Because in the press, I think there is. I mean, to your point, that first list of things you rattled off to me sounds like a really boring thing to read, you know? Which is, I think, part of why people got so sick of the games press. Because they were mainly talking about quantifiable things. And it's like, yeah, I know. I've seen the trailer. I looked at the screenshots. I know what a first-person shooter is. I get it. Unless you can tell me there's something wrong with it, you know, mechanically it's boring, you know? And I think that's sort of the direction that a lot of the community's gone in.
I think it's kind of maybe a response to that sometimes. It's almost like defensive when they're writing these reviews. Because it's like, well, all the community's going to jump on me because you can't really... Fun is intangible, mm-hmm. but you can point out these technical aspects, and it's almost like a lot of reviews are written as a defense because that's what the arguments in the forums turn into.
And not to hijack it as a press conversation, but it is. I think it's relevant. But I think part of it has been a reluctance for people to wear their subjectivity and their emotional preconceptions on their sleeve. And I think you have to. I think you know when you read a music review. The guy very often introduces his taste as part of the review and is very open about it. And I think there's been this tendency to pretend that you can review a game in a bubble, and it's impossible. So you can't help but compare Assassin's Creed 2 to the original because it's contextually really important that it wasn't just technically better. It was the story was better and the characters were better and the you know and but more than better, it was you know there's a lot of subjectivity to how you articulate that. And I think in the forums, what we're seeing is a lot of people. Being a little scared of being that subjective, because if the people just sort of come out, I thought it was awesome. There are factions that will just tear them down for it, you know, and it's kind of sad. But
it's very sad.
But I think it happens in all entertainment. You go into you know into movie forums, and people you know feel the need to pick apart little things, and you know they seem to be afraid of just saying, look, I know it had some faults, but I just kind of liked it.
But it seems to almost be a little more acceptable with movies. Like I love Happy Gilmore. It's not a masterpiece, but
new.
For those wondering,
that's the hockey one, right?
Yeah, kind of hockey golf one. But it's a fun movie. It entertains me, and yeah, when I'm looking at games, it doesn't seem like you can just say this is fun. Like that's not good enough a lot of times.
Well,
like,
you should be able. To Jason's point, you should be able. Some games you should be able to look. I know it's got X, Y, and Z wrong with it, but I liked it.
Like Wii Music for me, I had fun with it. It's stupid. I can't really explain why I had fun. I thought it was gonna. I started playing. I was like, ugh. But then I started screwing around, and I had a good time playing it. And I tried to convey that, you know, in the review. But some people, this game's stupid. Okay, but I had fun with it.
So, Jason, are you saying that fun isn't really as big of a component in sort of the modern AAA HD blockbuster games as it used to be?
What I'm kind of saying is I don't see people talking about fun they have with those games. I see people talking about, you know, analyzing the differences in frame rates between the 360 version and PS3 version. I see people talking about how, you know, the story has changed or is like, oh, our content's more mature. But especially with Modern Warfare 2, I haven't had anyone say anything about whether they had fun with the story mode.
That's true. And you rarely see a developer come into a meeting and say, all right, number one thing with this game is we made it more fun. There's always more other things. Then I guess you're supposed to say this plus this plus this plus this equals fun, but I don't think it always does. I think more isn't always better, and more of the technical aspects. Like I personally didn't find Grand Theft Auto 4 very fun. I found it to be a technical marvel, amazing piece of work, and certainly had some fun areas, but I thought that they were more focused on getting the technical part down right and you know, all the other stuff there, and then no one ever said, is this game actually fun to play as it's intended? Not screwing around with rockets, blowing, you know, people up on the sidewalk, but if you're playing our game, is it fun? And I don't know. People didn't seem to care.
So I think that's a weird example as well, because I think the screwing around with rockets is sort of part of what they were giving you. It was like, we're going to give you the story to play with, but if you just want to hang around in one little area and just do whatever the hell you want and, you know, work out how to jump a car over a truck into a shop front or whatever, then you can do that. And I think that might be part of the reluctance to pitch fun, is because so many games are open world now that they're like, well, we're just giving you the toys and the box and, you know, we'll give you something to keep you going, but if you want to go nuts with it, then it's there. And it's, we've been talking to Tim Schafer quite a bit about why he did various things with Brutal Legend. I think a lot of that was, this is related to that, in that he wanted to give you enough toys and, you know, and enough motivation to keep going to collect the toys, that some of it was on you. And I think we're seeing that a lot more in games, in that there's an experience that exists outside of the product that they're leaning on harder and harder now, and that it's something that happens in you when you're playing it, and it's your contribution to the experience is really important.
So are games turning into Lego sets where, you know, it's like, okay, it could make this one thing, but you could throw the pieces together and make anything else you want?
I think in some cases, yeah. I mean, in one case, in next year, that's literally what's happening. I mean, Lego Universe, I mean, it really is whatever you can make.
And Banjo-Kazooie, that recent
one of the most underrated games ever.
And that one was I think, a tough one for people to, if you just look at it as a reviewer, I got to get through this game and beat the levels. It wasn't very, very fun. But if you, all right, I got time to just totally approach this creatively and do whatever the hell I want and take it at my own pace, you know, it was a lot more fun. Like, I didn't have to review it, and I was thankful for it, to where I could screw around and make something that didn't work for an hour and then work on perfecting it. And have fun doing that, is whereas I think if you're just focused on the main thing of got to get through this game and beat it, which I think a lot of people are now. I think people beat games more now with now their save points, and you know the old school games didn't really seem to care much if you finished their game, and now it's seems to be more of a goal. It's almost like watching a movie. You're going to watch a movie to the end. Mm-hmm. When you play a game, you're going to play it to the end, and maybe that's it. I don't know. For me, sometimes achievements make it feel like work and less fun. I don't know if other people have gotten caught up in that.
Don't ask you about that.
The nominees for Game of the Year are,
I think we should segue into yours next, because there's something, there's connections
here.
There
are a lot of connections here.
that's true. So mine is, it's Game. I don't know what you guys think about Game of the Year. Really, anything about it. You know, your thoughts on it.
So we've been talking about this here over the last week on how to do it, and it always bothers me when there's a lot of categories in a Game of the Year thing, and because it diminishes the power of it.
Amen.
And if you ask someone, all right, forget that you have a dozen categories. If you had to pick one, could you do it? And then if you force someone to pick one, then ask them, is that the game you played the most this year? The answer is usually no, because I think regardless of how you're approaching being critical of games or talking about games or writing about games, people get into this weird, different headspace when they start talking about Game of the Year and feel that they need to be honoring this, like, almost a different set of values. But if it was just, what did you have the most fun with this year, it almost certainly won't be that game that wins.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless Plants vs. Zombies wins.
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking, like, I've played Plants vs. Zombies and Geodefense Swarm and Bejeweled Blitz probably more than anything else this year, just because I have it on my iPhone and I do it when I'm in the back of a cab, or and Blitz because it has the Facebook ranking system and you get competitive with people and they reset it every week. Good God. Like, even my mom got involved. I mean, it was like, it was getting crazy. And, like, you know, I'd see, you know, people that I used, you know, that we used to work with are in there, and Jeff Green would be in there. And then, you know, every now and then you get this, like, little poke coming through on Facebook, like, ha, ha, I just beat you, and it closes tomorrow. You know? And it's like, but if you were to kind of, I think, again, it comes back to almost to what you were saying about being in the community. If you were to say, hey, you know what, personal game of the year, you know, something really casual because I sunk a bunch of time into it, I think there's this worry that there's a cred, you know, it diminishes your cred, and that there's this need to be like, you know, well, you know, surely it should have been Assassin's Creed 2 or Uncharted 2.
Well, would you, if you did that, would you feel like it would diminish your cred?
Well, not anymore. I don't think my cred can diminish any more than it has from the stuff I've talked about over the last couple of years. So it's like,
look at the room of people he's in right now. You don't know what rock bottom looks like. He's in it. But we kind of encountered that problem at GameSpot, and I'll preface this by saying I'm really fed up with Game of the Year awards as they exist now. But one of the many meetings we would have, the topic of Boombox came up. And I reviewed it, and I really didn't like the game that much. I thought it was all right. People liked it way more than me. And that's great. But when it came to, can we call this the Wii Game of the Year? Well, Aaron gave it a 7.5. And it kind of disqualified, like, how can we give it to this when this game got a 9? And yeah, to your point, look, if more people in that room liked Boombox than me, then that should be that should be our Game of the Year. And
because if you were able in your review to adequately articulate why you didn't like it, doesn't mean that's just you, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not right. It's just what I thought of the game, and I think the other problem is with these Game of the Year things is that not everyone's played all the games. Mm-hmm. So how can I argue that Assassin's Creed 2 isn't the Game of the Year if I haven't played it? And how can you argue against mine if you haven't played it? Or it seems just like such a flawed thing, especially when people haven't played all the games and there's too many categories and, you know, there's a rush to get them done. And we're arguing, I think it was the year the PS3 came out, and Greg Kasavin was a big fan of Resistance and he loved the multiplayer. But we were swamped trying to review all the Wii and PS3 launch games. None of us had touched Resistance. And he's, oh, this is the multiplayer, you know, game of the year. And we're all like, eh. You know, we hadn't played it, so it just kind of fell by the wayside.
We're actually this year looking at, I mean, something that we did towards the end of the EGM as well is, rather than doing Xbox 360 Game of the Year and, you know, so platform and genre games of the year, which is just a cop-out for not picking one, is try and identify what some of the trends were this year and then kind of almost reverse engineer the things that we want to draw attention to. So it's like there are games that had particularly good story or character development or good script or things that were able to take a franchise that you previously thought wasn't that great and make you feel completely different about it. And, you know, to be able to reward actual achievement from games as opposed to just saying the best Wii game this year was New Super Mario Bros. Wii.
Right.
And then, you know, let the debate online, you know, commence. Because I think that's just, well, that as well, when you've got, like, you know, you end up with like 12 different categories that are just like, you know, it's so that you don't have to pick one. I'm still not sure if I had to pick one what it would be, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think, like you said, there's too many categories and people create them to, when you've got best music and then you've got best licensed music.
I was a VGA judge this year, and there were some of the categories where I couldn't think of anything to put in there. It was like, best performance by a human female. I'm like,
best game powered by a dude.
I don't know. So what you end up doing is trawling around for performances by a human female. And, you know, you're like, okay, well, What's-Her-Face was pretty good in Dragon Age. You know, I mean, like, I guess I'll put her in. And but, you know, there were some categories in that voting thing where I didn't really have an a strong opinion about the choice. I mean, some of them were good. Like, there was best downloadable game and best. But some of these, like, performance ones, because it's a live show and they want to invite celebrities, the ones that I actually enjoyed the nomination process better because I was trying to find some obscure stuff that I remember. Like, Claudia Black was in a couple of games, and so I put her in. And but then when you get the thing back, the thing from Spike is just this. It's clearly, here are the celebrities that were available. So people wanted more of them. And it's like, well, I didn't think any of them did a particularly good job, you know? Okay, so I guess Trisha Telfer from Battlestar Galactica, because I don't know, you know? And it was like, you get, that's the mindset you get into where it, with those kinds of things, where it's just like, well, I don't really agree with any of them. So, you know.
Well, that's one of the things I was wondering was, is part of the problem with the Game of the Year awards that everybody has them. That mm-hmm. 1UP has them, GamePro has them, GameSpot has them, IGN has them, you know, and is it, are the, like, the Spike Awards, is that, like, a good thing? Because it's on TV, it's more of a central thing with voters from everywhere, but then, you know, right away you explain, well, you know, they're giving us this, we can't really pick what we want. And,
well, I mean, we narrow it down, but, I mean, in some areas it's more apparent than others, I think, but that when it gets into the celebrity stuff, you are sort of somewhat at the mercy of... And very conscious of, okay, we're working with a TV production group on this because it's, you know, the reason they have the you know, the, I can't remember what they call us, the advisors or whatever, is they want the gamer cred. And, like, early on, I mean, it was clear that they weren't listening to anyone. And I don't know if you remember the first VGAs. I mean, it was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
It's getting better. But there are still those, like, it's, you know, it's entertainment, it's a show, it's... You know, they have a different set of concerns for that thing. I mean, it's on this weekend, and it's, you know, it's all about the spectacle of it. And, you know, well, who they're giving the award to is almost irrelevant, you know. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to, you know, Game of the Year for, I mean, particularly for people at GameSpot and IGN, where, you know, it's a catalyst for community as much as anything as well. But I think more of an acknowledgement of that wouldn't hurt. Like, it's not, the important thing isn't declaring this is the best game of the year. It's like, all right, we're going to stick this out there. We thought this was really good. All right, discuss. Yeah, please come here and congregate around our little set of things to talk about it.
I'd rather read about what people's community think are their favorite games of the year or their games of the year rather than what we, the press, would say is the game of the year.
Mm-hmm. I think it really ties into part of why people like reading reviews is that, I mean, it kind of validates their opinions or, you know, sends them into a blind rage so that they can argue about it endlessly. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating on our side because we feel like we're doing kind of the same thing year after year. But, you know, it seems to be so popular with the community that it's kind of hard to stop. Although I'm really excited about the way that we're going to be approaching Game of the Year stuff at Bitmob.
Well, would it feel better if there was one organization in the press, you know, like the baseball writers in Major League Baseball, that got together, they're all credible, well, most of them, and voted on, you know, these are the official Game of the Year and such.
That would be cool if it worked. I mean, we have things like that with, like, the E3 judges, and, you know, I don't think that that's, I mean, that's kind of a whole different topic, but I don't think that's a very good system at all. But if it could be done right, yeah, I think it would be pretty interesting.
I think it would give them a little more credibility. I don't know that it would make anything right. But, yeah, I think at least there would be, you know, someone, you know, that it's a real thing and it's focused and it's not. So we can give little trophies to everybody and make everybody happy. And I think, you know, like what Damien said, is it seems to have turned into its own monster now that everyone has to do it because it does get traffic, and it's like whether they want to do it or not.
What's driving me crazy right now as well is all these games of the decade things as well, because it's 2010. I'm just like, can we just do one?
Yeah, it's Plants vs. Zombies again. Oh. Sweep.
I mean, all right, second best game of the decade. You know,
the iPhone 1 comes out soon. You're never going to stop.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's no good.
I've never played it.
You've never played it?
No. I feel like I'm missing out since it's a game of the decade.
It's a lot of fun. I love the song that they put out for that, too.
I guess.
So cute.
Would you care to sing it, Jason?
Oh, no one wants to hear me sing.
No, we do.
No, you don't.
We do. This podcast is not moving along until you sing something. I'll sit here for at least another 10 seconds.
See, there are zombies on my lawn. There, or is it the lawn? There are zombies on the lawn.
There's a zombie on your lawn. There's a zombie on your lawn.
So, Game of the Year, like we're none of us are satisfied with where you're kind of starting a new regime here at GamePro.
Yeah, so we're trying to keep the categories down to like a dozen and not do platform and not do genre and try and do. What I wanted to do was start with a list of games that we wanted to give awards to, because mm-hmm. you can lock yourself into this weird kind of like, if you go categories first and then you write down the things that you know are going to be in those categories, and you're like, well, there's like 12 games that aren't going to win awards because we're kind of locked into this other way of thinking. And I think these more kind of ambiguous, not ambiguous, but I guess reflecting the sort of artistry a little more than the category, I think. You know, there are some games that did, you know, that had good voice acting, or they had good story this year, or, you know, like I said, there were a few that managed to reboot the franchise a little bit. And I think next year that's a trend that we're going to see even more. There's a lot of franchises getting rebooted next year. And almost, you know, and going back to the beginning and pretending the last 10 years didn't happen, like Medal of Honor.
It's worked for the movies.
And I think there's, you know, I think there should be this element of like, well, what did you spend a lot of time playing?
Well, before we go on to the next topic, I'd just like to know which games did we spend the most time playing this year? I think we have an idea what John spent the most time.
Bizarrely, I think Motor Storm Pacific Rift I sunk a lot of time in. That was this year, right?
I think.
Beginning of the year, if
yeah.
I remember correctly.
I played it a lot online, and I played it, you know, it was just one of those games that you sort of, you know, you have those games that you kind of, like, keep getting drawn back to?
Mm-hmm.
And right now that's happening to me with Borderlands. It's driving me crazy, too. Because I think I hate it.
No rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay. I got mouths to feed.
I'm very upset with it because I play the PC version. And, oh, man. The PC owners are just getting screwed. We finally got the first DLC released, yesterday, so that today they could announce the next expansion, the next release.
Which they just
DLC
acknowledged will be on PC.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they
we're
have
not
a date
tell you
for
when.
360, and then like a week later it's on PS3, and then it will be on PC at some point.
Yeah.
Nebulous moment in the future.
What about you, Jason?
I promise it's much more obscure than anything you're playing. Two games, because it's the original game and the expand alone. King's Bounty, which is a strategy RPG.
Wow.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Dude, you're so hardcore.
Well, geekcore maybe, but not hardcore.
And for me, I mean, in terms of hours, it's got to be World of Warcraft. But the games, I mean, that you just kind of have to disqualify that. But the games that really pulled me away from that were, of course, Plants vs. Zombies, Dragon Age, and Borderlands.
Like for me, it was kind of in the same boat with John there, Scrabble on the iPhone.
Oh, I played a lot of that too. My wife got really competitive with that.
I was terrible at it, and then I actually learned like their strategy to Scrabble, and
you have to memorize all the two-letter words.
Two-letter words and building onto other words, and
yeah,
I got really competitive. I don't know how many games that I played, but as far as other games, I loved Shadow Complex. That was a short game, but I beat it in one very, very, very long sitting, but had a phenomenal time with it. And Batman, which I was skeptical about because I got to it a little late. I was like, it's a Batman game. It's IDOS. Come on.
It was very good. I thought the way they paced it was really good. Like, you never had to do the same thing again and again and again. Like, the way that it mixed up the objectives, I thought was really smart.
Yeah, it wasn't too tedious with backtracking. Because there's a lot of stuff you couldn't get to, but a lot of times you naturally came back to that area. And once the combat clicked with me, which took a little while because I was just mashing the buttons and didn't really get the timing thing. So I think the collecting thing kind of leads us to our topic that Damien has. Well, I'll go ahead and read it again.
By Daniel Sim. Yeah, I mean, basically it's just asking which games we've played so obsessively that, you know, we'll instantly restart a level if something goes wrong. And for me, that's mostly been driving games.
I was going to go against driving games as well.
Yeah. Like, if you don't get that first turn right, forget it.
Yeah.
Restart.
Forza 2 and now Forza 3, I play like that. You get to that point where you're like, all right, I'm just not going to be able to catch him.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yep.
Need for Speed Shift as well. Like, if, did you do the duels in Need for Speed Shift?
I did some of them, yeah.
The M3 RS4 duel on the Nürburgring. If you screw up any of the turns and don't get a perfect line, you're not going to do it.
That's a long course.
I'll say, that's such a long course.
And that, you just end up, there's no point finishing. So you quit and go back and start again. And it'd be like, you know, I'd be playing, my wife would be watching me. And she's like, why did you do that? You know? I'm like, because I'm not going to beat him. How do you know?
So they basically make you learn the Nürburgring track? I mean,
and like you get, you know, there'd be that one point, and I would mess up, the turn that has the painted left-hand side?
The carousel?
You get the wrong line into that. And
right,
the finish line, the duel will very often be just around the little right kick after that. And if you exit that turn wrong, he'll catch you like 100 yards from the end.
Mm.
And that would be the worst, where going into the turn, you know he's going to take you.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck yeah, it took me 5 minutes to get here.
You know, that's so infuriating about racing games, because that's not how auto racing is. You know, if you miss one turn, you're out of it. No, of course not. You know, it shouldn't be a reflection of the games.
Those are hardcore racers, though.
Apparently.
Not tough enough. Like, mine are old school, but one is a racing game. Mine, F-Zero, one that it was big. You know, part of it was because there was no, it didn't have any split screen, I don't think. So it was you against computer or you trying to set times. And I would just go through and it was to the point where if I grazed anything or took anything or restart, because I know my time is, I was beating my scores, you know, by hundreds of a second. And I play that game now, because the original question was like, what, you kind of quit playing it because of that level of perfection. Like if you go back to it, if I go back to F-Zero now, I feel like I suck. I'm like, man, I used to be the man at this track. And fighting games for me too, some of the old school ones, like Killer Instinct, where you could chain together all the combos and had them all memorized. And now I play that, and it's just not the same, because I don't have I'm not perfect. I'm not a perfect killing machine with Jago anymore.
You know, this is a phenomenon that I never really dealt with until this year. Oddly enough, with the game I just mentioned in the last part, King's Bounty. It's like Heroes of Might and Magic, and you have collections of armies, and you fight other collections of armies. And in the first game, every time I'd have a battle, I would say, okay, I got to the point where I don't want to go around refilling my army, so I'm going to fight, and I don't want to lose one single soldier. In the expansion that came out last month, there's achievements tied to not losing any troops. And so every fight, I want to keep progressing along the medals that they call these achievements and get the bonuses. And if I even lose just one little guy, I start over. And it's horribly obsessive.
But are you going to quit doing it?
Oh, of course not. Okay. Of course not.
I've got another game that I'm pretty sure is not on anyone else's list, which is the original Pac-Man World, which I would not have played obsessively except that I was writing the strategy guide on it.
Oh.
And there was one level, there are levels that are kind of time trial levels with, you know, various rankings, and to get the best ranking you have to do it absolutely perfectly. And there was one level that was, it was an ice level, of course, and it was just a series of little islands that, you know, if you fall off, it's all over. And, man, I must have played that over and over and over for about a day.
I don't like time trials in 3D platform games, period.
It's not a good
idea. And that was actually the one part of Assassin's Creed 2 that I didn't enjoy particularly much. Those little time trials where you have to race across the rooftops to, and they're elective up to a point right near the end where when you get to the, have you played it all the way through?
I haven't, no.
So there's this, one of the objectives in Assassin's Creed 2 is you have to get into this party. And in order to get to the party, you have to win this golden mask. And to win the golden mask, there's these tests that you have to do, one of which is racing across the rooftops.
Ugh.
And it seemed like I would like do it over and over. I'm like, this is, it's fucking impossible. There is no way you can do this. There's got to be a bug. You know, you get to that point where you're so defiant that you assume there's something wrong with the game instead of you.
That's how I, you know, if that's nauseating in platformers, it's even worse when you find it in a role-playing game, like in Knights of the Old Republic, where you're having the race on Terrace. Oh, I hated that so much.
I think a recent one for me, I mentioned Batman, the trials in there where you'd have the fights and
and you had to sort of really ratchet up the combos.
I loved them, and I really got into them and perfecting them, but that was another one. It was like if you broke your chain on some of them, that you weren't getting the gold. So I was like, all right, start over, start over, start over. And I enjoyed that for much longer than I normally would, which is a credit to the game and the way that they designed the combat. But I eventually reached a point where this is it. I'm maxed out. Like, I just can't do this. I contemplated buying the game. I had it from Gamefly forever because I kept playing it so long. And I was like, well, maybe you should buy it. But I was like, I think I've done all I can with this game because I'll buy it, but I'll be rusty when I get back to it, and I won't be able to do this.
Mm-hmm. It's going to haunt you forever.
Yeah. All right, we got a couple topics left.
Mine's a nice lightweight one. You want
to
do that?
We'll do that, and then we'll do the other community topic, which I forgot to read earlier because I was so excited to talk about vitamin water for the World Cup or something. So yeah.
So mine is just stuff that you intended to play this year but haven't, and why. So for me, I still have a copy of Dragon Age that I've not even taken out of the wrapper.
I can imagine why. I mean, you've probably read it. It's about an 80-hour game.
It's it's exactly the kind of thing that I know is going to get me when I start it.
So good.
I also haven't played the new Ratchet & Clank, and it's something that I really want to play. Bizarrely, when I played Killzone 2, I played it on a debug, and I have a retail copy. And there's just something calling.
I always hated that.
Calling me because I want the trophies and everything. And it's totally irrational. I beat it on a debug. But
and you know you beat it on a debug.
And I know I beat it on a debug.
But the world doesn't know you beat it on a debug.
And I still have an unopened copy of Fable 2 from last year that I didn't play. And the reason that I'm not getting to any of these is because I'm playing Borderlands every night. And I don't know why, because it's driving me crazy.
Well, can't you just walk away from it?
I can't walk away from it. There's something about it that there are nights where, like, I am not having fun, to go back to your point, at all. I mean, it is pure grind, but I'm doing it, and I don't quite understand why.
Are you playing solo?
Solo right now.
You're on, like, the second playthrough, or...?
No, I'm still on my first. I'm just sort of grinding my way through it, and... Uh-huh. You just get to that point and you put it down in disgust, and the next night you go, well, you know, maybe if I just leave this area and I'll go out and I'll shoot some dog things for a while. And then, oh, look, it's a transport station. Maybe I'll get one of the things with the rocket launcher on it and I'll just go blow some shit up for half an hour and get the experience points, and I'll level up, and then I'll go back in and do this thing. And before you know it, you've burnt through, you know, 3 hours. Or, I mean, the first time I put it in, I was like, well, I'm just going to try it, you know, before I go to bed. Half an hour, see what it's like. Uh-huh. Next thing I know, it's like 2:30 in the morning. And
I'm curious to see how that moment's going to unfold when you beat the game and then realize that you can restart it all over again from the very beginning.
I did notice on the title screen, on the stat screen, it has a playthrough count.
Yeah, playthrough 2, all the enemies are higher level and drop better loot. And then there's also playthrough 2.5 where you get the best loot.
Now, is it the loot factor that keeps you?
I think it must be. It's just sort of like...
Because you can quit other games you don't like.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is about this one. I think it's the gun thing. And I found myself, like, hanging on to certain weapons for longer. Yeah. And then, you know...
Especially if you think about having, like, alt characters. Like, I've outgrown this weapon, but it was awesome. And in my 20s or whatever, I'm probably going to want to bequeath this to someone else later. And then you just got to keep it.
I haven't. That's one on my to-do list. So.
Borderlands.
It's. I was worried that everyone's left me behind. Because everyone's like, oh, you gotta play with people. And Dragon Age is another one, because it's like Pandora's box. Like, sitting there, all wrapped up. Like, I play Dragon Age tonight. I gotta go to bed in a couple hours. Like, you know, it's gonna be a late night, and you know you're probably not gonna get much of anything else done soon after that. And so it's kind of intimidating me on my shelves. I haven't finished Modern Warfare 2 yet. I'm working on that. And I still have FIFA 10 waiting for me to create another superstar. That's one thing that kills me is doing that year after year. Like, I made a guy in last year's FIFA that I got, you know, he's great. I was like, all right, let me start over. And same thing with Tiger Woods every year. So I'll do it, especially probably when the Ultimate Team comes out, because I love the card collecting aspect of it.
I think one thing that we're seeing, and that's going to make this conversation something that we have every year, is that more and more games now they're trading in loyalty as much as they're trading in just trying to get you to buy them. It's not just buy it and finish it; it's buy it and stick with it, so that we can keep charging you extra little bits. You know, like Borderlands, it's like you beat it and then you feel that you've exhausted it, and then Zombie Island comes out, and that's $10. So you try that, and you play through it. And then they, and the new one is like, it's all arenas, and it has a new gameplay mode that's like Smash TV. Don't you want that? It's only $10.
And it's out and in it's like 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it's like they're, at the moment, they're kind of...
Unless you're playing on PC.
Yeah.
They're keeping up with the rabid nature of the... Or, and I think I think Gearbox has been really smart in that they're like, we'll keep our foot on the gas as long as you do, you know? Mm-hmm.
I like that.
It reminds me of the way sports teams market themselves, and it reminds me of the way shoe companies market themselves.
You got to explain this one.
Okay, well, because, you know, a little more thing to keep bringing you back. Mm-hmm. You know, sports teams, you know, especially in baseball, they offer you these little promotions to keep coming to the ballpark. And, you know, they have, oh, you know what, if you're really dedicated, you have three different jerseys to buy for your favorite player instead of just one.
Which change slightly in each season.
Mm-hmm. And then with shoe companies, you know, Nike has, okay, well, here's our shoes, but now we've got these small little collector's editions of these really special shoes you have to buy, and the kids are out lining up for them, and it really reminds me of that.
But I think at least with these games, and when done right, like John said, it is, there's some value there, and it's a good thing that you like what they did with Burnout Paradise. Mm-hmm. Like they kept working on it and people kept playing it, and phenomenal value out of that game. There's others that don't do it so well where you feel like I got a little shortchanged here, and you know, a week or two after, they're giving me downloadable content, and, you know, why wasn't this in the first game, and or the game I purchased, and you more feel like you're buying stuff that was missing rather than some of these games, you know, like again, like Burnout and Borderlands, where you're getting more.
Well, this is why I think it's smart that EA has been like the first big publisher to say we're cutting down the number of releases we're making, because they are making these games where they're trying to get you hooked and to keep playing it until they can sell you the full next thing, or they want to get you so hooked that you'll just keep dropping money on it for as long as they can keep adding things to it. And it's something that is going to, I mean, it already is really hurting some of the stuff in the PC space, but particularly in the free to play, and that because they're all about loyalty marketing. And it's like, you know, Crimecraft today, they came out with their Facebook and iPhone app, which is like Mafia Wars, but it feeds into Crimecraft, to that community. It's like now you can take it with you and you can be earning gold anywhere. And it's like, it's all about making you play this one thing for as much as humanly possible. But there's so many of them that none of them are in a position to hit critical mass yet, because they're all fighting after the same kinds of people. And I think for EA to say, look, we're going to stop doing 60 games, we're going to do 30 games, and then we have a better shot at, you know, selling a decent number of each of them, and then also getting more money out of you on each of them and having you stick with it and play it. And I think, you know, what we'll notice is that as an audience, we're playing fewer games every year, but we're playing more hours of them.
And probably getting same amount of enjoyment as you were back in the day. Because I think, like right now, you and I feel behind. I feel behind on these games. These games have been out for a few weeks. I'm like, oh, God, I missed the boat.
Well, Borderlands, Fable 2, I'm pretty sure I'll never play it.
Sometimes you gotta throw in the towel.
It'll be there until the day that the Xbox 360 comes off the shelf and whatever replaces it goes up on the shelf, and I'll be going through. I have this basket that sits behind the TV in this like armoire thing, and I'll be going through it. There'll be this pile of games, and Fable 2 will be right there, and I'll be like, I really should have played that.
The two games that I have sitting there and I think I may not ever open are Prototype and Infamous.
Oh, you should play Infamous.
Yeah, I know I should. I know I should.
Don't fuck around with Prototype. It's shit. But play Infamous.
I played Infamous for a bit, but I really ran out of steam. It didn't take too long for me.
Well, that's another side effect of so many games, is these ones that are pretty good. You just don't feel like you can spend that time on them because you gotta get to the next thing. Gotta get to the next thing. There's more coming out. I gotta behind.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you're somebody like me who enjoys playing older games on the PC and playing many of the community-made mods, you get to the point where you don't even feel like you need to be buying all the new games because you always have something new to check out from someone else.
Right, which is kind of maybe what consoles are learning a lesson that, hey, maybe we didn't need to make this a whole new game. We can make an expansion for it. Mm-hmm. Like PC games have done forever. That's never caught on with game. I mean, now we have hard drives on the systems, which will certainly help with some of that. And I think Rock Band 2 has done a really good job with keeping that going. Unfortunately, it's so intertwined with Guitar Hero that they've been just cranking those out when those should have been expansion packs, and both of them have kind of gotten muddled to where I think people are tired of buying them. And
I've got a pretty big pile of good stuff that I haven't played. Batman's on there.
Have you not played it at all?
No. I'm afraid I may have missed the boat on that one because...
No.
So do you think there is a point where you just know that I'm never going to go back?
Yeah, definitely.
But is that symptomatic of the fact that we're just so into games in general and that... I mean, I'm sure it's not just that we're in the press end of thing. I think there are people that you just sort of keep up with the flow. And we don't have the equivalent of it coming out on DVD later, so you hit it then, you know? Like,
right.
You know, I have two kids, so me and my wife go to the movies maybe twice, three times a year. You know? So, and it, you know, I think this year I saw The Hangover and I saw Star Trek and I saw maybe one other movie and I don't remember what it is.
New Twilight. So,
oh yeah, yeah, we were there. Yeah, midnight showing for that. And but then you know that you can get it on demand, or you can get it on iTunes, or you can get it on DVD, or you can get it on Netflix, or and you don't have that luxury with games, and it's almost like I'm wondering if like Xbox Originals will, or whatever it's called now, the you know the on demand thing will eventually evolve into that kind of it's $10 now, maybe I will go for it.
I think there's a segment of gamers who do play all their games late. They wait for the prices to come down. And when it's down to that mark, whatever it is, $40, $30, $25, that's when they pick it up. You know, I think our perspective is a little skewed on that because we feel like in order to be relevant with what's going on, in order to keep up with the ones who are buying it on the first day, we need to play everything when it comes out. But I think there's a lot of gamers out there who wait.
Well, I think everything's moving to that Nintendo model. I mean, we were just looking at the NPDs this week, and it's like, you know, 1.2 million Wiis, and what sold well? Wii Sports Plus, Mario Kart, and Wii Sports Resort. And then, you know, I mean, the interesting thing, I mean, New Super Mario Bros. Sold 1.3 million. If it does well next month, then it's in the club, which along with, you know, I think Smash Bros. Blips up a little bit when it's a dead month, but it's always Mario Kart, whatever the latest version of Wii Sports is, and whatever, and, you know. And the Nintendo magic now is that it's like packaged goods now. It's like, you know, when you buy a Wii, here's the stuff that you buy with it. And it doesn't matter that it came out ages. I mean, Mario Kart on DS, which routinely sells, at least in the top 20, came out in 2005.
And there hasn't been a price cut on it yet.
No, it's still $30.
Yeah, I'll catch that when it drops. No, you won't.
No, you won't, because people keep buying it.
Because then the price will go up, because they'll quit making it like they did with Tetris.
Yeah.
Like, then you're really boned. It's like, oh, people love this game. We'll stop making it, make you pay more.
But I think that's something that Sony and Microsoft haven't gotten as good at doing is establishing those. And part of it is retail. And I think Nintendo, it was maybe a happy accident at the beginning that they had certain games that became evergreen. But there's never been the sort of evergreen Xbox 360 game. I think they would have liked it to have been Halo, but it wasn't.
Well, Halo was evergreen for a long time.
Yeah. But there isn't the game, like, when you go buy a 360, if you were to go out and buy a 360 tomorrow.
Right, right.
What would you buy with it?
The first game I would buy would be Pac-Man Championship Edition.
Really?
Really.
Yeah. Well, it's a hell of a game, but I don't think it quite falls into Mario.
It's on the iPhone now as well, with a really strange pricing structure as
well. That's what I read today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was curious about that.
$299, but if you want the whole thing, you got to drop another $399 to get all the levels. Which is a weird, it's like doing the freemium thing, but charging you for the initial thing.
All right, we got one more topic here, and it's a surprise to you guys because I didn't introduce it, but I'm sure you guys will manage. It's from Kevin Zhang Zing. I hope I pronounced that name close to right.
I'm sure.
Close. Since Derek Levine recently made a community activity post about replaying a favorite game and recalling the fun parts of said favorite game, I tried getting into Marathon again. But it seemed really bad to me, and so many game mechanics were broken, but that's another story. Are there any games that you really loved in the past that now just don't seem to have aged very well?
The first Baldur's Gate.
Wow, that was emphatic. Did you do it recently?
Yeah, I have. I have. After Dragon Age came out, I said, oh, great, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm going to play both of the Baldur's Gate games again.
Yeah.
And, oh, it's such slow
going. Do you have a good old games account? Is that where you're pulling all this stuff from?
Pulling it from my shelf.
Oh, okay.
I don't get rid of anything.
From the Jason Wilson collection.
I mean, I do have a good old games account and some of the things I've missed.
They're just getting better and better. I think it's, you know.
It's great.
The stuff they're picking and the pricing is fantastic.
I can't wait till they finally get Wizardry up there. I think that'll be great. But getting back to the early going of Baldur's Gate, the original, so slow. And I, you know, when you especially compare it to Baldur's Gate 2, with so much to do and you have some power up at that point, But in the first game where, you know, a couple kobolds could just wipe you out, I just couldn't get through it.
That's another one of my pile of shame games, but now maybe I'll leave it on the pile of shame forever after that.
Well, if you haven't played both of them, you might be able to deal with it.
Or should I just go straight to Baldur's Gate 2?
Maybe. Yep. Maybe.
I think for me, one of them is any old Madden game.
Yeah.
I mean, even
you can't go back.
It's hard enough to go back in the same generation of Madden and still have as good a time as you did with the current one, but if you try to go back and play like the original Madden on Genesis.
Did you? Yeah. We got the anniversary thing last year or whatever, and it had the original Madden. Oh, oh dear. Whoa.
Like, oh, great. Yeah, you might complete one series and you're like, oh.
It's not like Tecmo Bowl, huh?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, Tecmo Bowl is still fun, and the old NHL games are still fun. But
I don't know. Those were on my list, too. I mean,
really?
I played
NHL 94?
So many hours with those games, but it's hard for me to go back and pick them up again.
I'm still good at
I mean, I'll kill you.
Oh, I don't
absolutely. But
NHL hockey.
I won't
in the future, you're getting this article. Me against you. NHL 94.
All right.
This will just be his excuse when I beat him. Like, I told you this game wasn't good anymore.
We'll see.
Whatever.
I think Golden Age is on,
Goldeneye
is on everyone's
yeah.
list. The frame rate on that was just, it'll make you sick.
Always comes up in conversations where everyone says, oh, Goldeneye, that was the shit. And people are like, have you gone back and played that? And the answer is always no, but the people that have are like, eh, it's.
I got to say on that, it's probably somewhat sacrilegious, but Doom. Not as good as I remember it being.
Because
there was like all this fuss when there was the new, you know, the iPhone Doom Classic came out, and I went back, and I'm like,
yeah.
Things have moved on, and expectations have changed, and it was, you know, I can remember. And a lot of it is you're comparing it to that emotion that you had when you played it the first time.
Yeah, trying to recapture that, and I think it's what you get.
And another one, I dug out the original Warhawk from PS1.
I remember that game.
Did not age well.
Really?
No.
Yeah, we talked about for the PlayStation's birthday last week that just so many of the PlayStation games haven't aged well.
It's no.
Frame rates and the dawn of 3D, and then the ones that, God forbid, didn't have dual shot controls like the original Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although one that did age pretty well is the original Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah.
It still works because it was pretty pure in what it was. I mean, it wasn't trying to be, you know, something huge and open. I mean, it was a tunnel platformer, and it still works.
And Final Fantasy Tactics still holds up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we definitely didn't include all games.
No,
But so many, where you're, you know, where it's just, just the technical hurdle. You're just like, oof. Or, I don't know, with PlayStation, they've continued so many of those franchises that it's been perfected at this point. And you go back, and you're just like, eh. I don't know, a lot of times I just avoid these games, like, you know, where this guy like wanted to play Marathon again. Like, I just know, like, I love Shenmue. It's one of my most favorite games of all time, and I played a little on the Dreamcast anniversary this year just to celebrate, play like an hour of it. Had a cool time just kind of reminiscing, but I think if I tried to play the whole thing again, you know, I'd find out that the pacing and stuff would probably kill me, since the magic of waiting to find out what happened isn't there anymore.
So you had kind of like a private Dreamcast anniversary observation at the Thomas household.
I did. I
glass of champagne.
I got it out.
On.
I hooked up the VGA adapter, and I played some Shenmue and some Crazy Taxi, and some Ready to Rumble.
Did you play some Pen Pen Triathlon?
No, I didn't hit the entire launch lineup there.
How about Choo Choo Rocket, which is still awesome.
And still has one of the best Japanese commercials of all time.
And they should do it on iPhone. That's one game that would work really well on iPhone.
That would. And right now in this podcast is where I'm going to put in the Choo Choo Rocket song for everyone to enjoy.
Fantastic.
Choo Choo Rocket, do nezumi o tasukero. Choo Choo Rocket, do neko wa kowai. Choo Choo Rocket, do rocket, do sugoi. Zubababa!
All right, that was outstanding.
Wasn't that awesome? I love that.
Never gets old. It never gets old. But to make this, I don't know why I'm volunteering this already pathetic evening that I'm sharing with you. Even more. It was 2 weeks after my birthday. God,
you
should just hit the stop
button. You were alone.
Button.
You weren't wearing pants.
I might not have been wearing pants. That part I don't remember. But I put my little happy birthday balloon next to the Dreamcast.
Really?
Wow.
This is why
it was
still,
I didn't buy it for it. I had it left over. My wife got it from me, and it was right there. And that
did your wife join in? Something tells me she didn't.
I think she was out that night.
She actually got home late that night. But then I was like, hon, come over here and look at the
and
koi
you were
pond.
There, you were there, like on the couch, no pants on, empty bottle of champagne,
birthday
glass,
balloons,
a sort of wizened balloon, like just sort of like at half mast because it's gone down a little bit.
Looking
pen
for sailors.
Triathlon on the screen.
This is why we just don't drop by and say hi.
It was a good night, and I love the Dreamcast, and you guys can't shame me into not loving it as much as you try.
We all love the Dreamcast, don't we?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was so into PC
gaming.
Shoes
nipples got hard for
it,
for God's sakes.
The Dreamcast was even on my radar back
really,
then.
I have very fond memories of that whole period and like the stuff that we did on EGM back then.
EGM covered
the
shit out of it.
Yeah, we did a massive. We spent stupid money on that cover story, like thousands of dollars on a photo shoot in New York with a fishing controller on a fish stand, and it was just, it was huge. And like, you know, we all believe Peter Moore.
I was actually looking through that issue in the last few weeks.
It's
and
one of my favorite issues of a magazine I've ever worked.
I had read it a billion times anyway because it was, you had you know, it was like, all right, each game and the impressions, and it's like, all right, I mean, that's how I picked the games I was going to pre-order. You know, reading that, I was like, all right, I'm sure of Sonic Adventure. Okay, uh-huh. This one I'll skip. All right, you know, Blue Stinger, no.
New. Nobody bought Blue Stinger.
Yeah, but I didn't buy it thanks to you guys. You know, you guys had me warned off ahead of time. So, yeah, that was that's definitely one of my favorite issues. So
I found, rummaging through a drawer recently, and what were they called? The MMU?
Oh, yeah.
I found the an MMU, and I also found a Pocket VMU. Station. Remember those?
The Pocket Station was pretty damn rare.
Remember those? It was a memory card that had a tiny little LCD screen and a D-pad
right,
and two buttons.
Right.
Oh,
did the battery still work?
No.
Hell no. The Pocket Station batteries didn't work after about 2 weeks after you got it. that one, those were really bad. The VMU ones were pretty bad too. But yeah, I still have random ones that I'll find in boxes at home, and I'm like, God, I wonder what treasure's on here. And
maybe my Godzilla save is on here.
I'm always hoping, like, my Samba de Amigo save, like, is this the one where it's on there? Because I'll bust that out every now and then with other people, though. That's not a private Dreamcast game. That's,
you have your Samba de Amigo night.
Yeah, that's the
again,
share.
No pants.
Well, who plays Samba de Amigo with pants? I mean,
too restricting.
Come on. Talk
and
about.
Yeah, they're doing the whole thing. Your wife walks in, and she just turns around and walks out.
And then you just keep going. Don't miss a beat. Well, I guess that's about it. Everyone's staring at me like they want to leave me alone in this padded walled room here. Everyone should go listen to Rebel FM and Geekbox, our sister podcast on the Hammersuit Network. Community questions, you guys can send them to letters@bitmob.com, subject titled Mobcast, and we're bringing back the mailbag, not on the podcast, but on the site. So The same, it's very convenient. It's the same email address, and you just put a different subject in there, maybe like mailbag. And then we look at it, we know where it goes. And we've got next week's podcast already booked. It will be a sort of GameSpot reunion for people. We will have Greg Kasavin, former head of GameSpot and now producer at 2K, and Brad Shoemaker of Giant Bomb, formerly of GameSpot, and Jason Ocampo, who, again, formerly of GameSpot, and me, formerly of GameSpot, if you're finding a theme there. So you guys kind of got the ex-Ziff podcast today, and a little GameSpot action next week. So if you guys have any questions for any of those guys, send them in, and we'll pepper them with
what
those.
Game is, I heard he was at 2K. What game is Greg working on?
I'm actually not sure. Huh. I guess we'll find out. Well, they'll have to listen next week. That's a good teaser. Way to get them excited.
Yeah.
And
find out which
it's
game.
It's a good thing we're wrapping out because we're starting to get that dude smell in here.
Yeah, it's John. And would you like to tell people about GamePro a little bit?
Since
it's kind of a big deal.
What's the date today? It's the 10th. So subscribers will get the new look GamePro starting next week. So we completely redesigned the magazine. And then in January, we're currently on track to, by the end of January, the completely redesigned website will also hit. So the former look and feel of GamePro will be gone by February 2010. People have been saying nice things about it. So Kevin Gifford said something very nice yesterday on Gamma Sutra, which I was not expecting at all. And that was just on what we'd started. We did some little bits in the Bioshock issue that just came out. But
if you were trying to get people to give it a look, what would you tell them?
It's a lot more grown up. basically, we made it for and try to make a magazine that you know you would want to read as we are now. I think a lot of people remember GamePro when they were kids, and I think because of that, assume it's a kids mag. And I mean, it hasn't been a kids mag for a long time, so kind of the attitude was to go and like, okay, well, if you read it 10, 15 years ago, just imagine that GamePro grew up with you, and the new one will be kind of now aimed at you now. So it's a lot more about experiences, a lot more about people. A lot of friends from the industry helping out, and not in this one, but in the follow-up one, like Robert Ashley's writing for us, and Joe Rubicki's writing for us, and John Riccardi's writing for us. A lot of stuff that sort of brings in, how much of the people goes into video games as much as the product stuff.
Cool. That sounds intriguing. And you can still read it in the bathroom?
You can still read it in the bathroom, yeah. Great. It's still conveniently sized.
I'll say that right on the front. Conveniently sized. Brilliant. Jason, anything you want to share?
Jason's also working with me on GamePro this month.
I am, and it's been a lot of fun.
Good.
I was so excited when I saw Joe Rubicki's byline again.
It's weird when people that we used to work with.
I know. It's like, oh, wait a second. I'm editing Joe. I'm editing John. I'm editing Robert next. It's like I never left Ziff.
And they're going, God damn it. Jason's butchering my work again. It's like I never left Ziff. Damien, anything you want to share with the...
I'm good. I'm all set.
Nothing?
Nope.
You got to open up to these people.
I have a question of the Bitmob community.
Ooh. Shoot. Tables have turned.
So a lot of people have said that they would like me to do a podcast at GamePro. But I don't want to do just another version of anything that I've done before, which is, four or five dudes sitting around talking about games. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm just interested to know, what people want from a podcast. Because I think, the formula has been done sort of over and over. I mean, there are some good breakouts from that. I think what Robert's doing with The Life Well Wasted is, like, fantastic. But there's a reason it's once a month.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, because I think people would like that every week.
I know, but I mean, you need...
It's tough.
You need this American Life's, like, production staff to be able to do that. But him doing it on his own and doing all the music, I mean, I've been catching up on it recently, and the one that he put out last week was fantastic.
Yeah, that was really good.
The cosplay one I thought was amazing as well. And he actually, for the for our March issue, which comes out in early February, he was writing about doing the cosplay one. And there was one of the girls that he was interviewing, she had some, like, neurological disorder where she couldn't... she couldn't operate in, like, daylight or light, so he was interviewing her in the dark.
Wow.
So his whole thing is, like, it's the stories about the people that love video games or whatever, but then the stories behind the stories are also really interesting, and that's kind of what we're sort of asking him to write for us, is, like, some of the background on things. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a sort of extreme example, but I'm just curious to have, people say what they crave from a radio style show.
It's tough. I think we're having carved this one out and kind of figure out what.
I think you guys have unique thing, and the fact that you stick to it is really important. I think. I mean, the one thing that we learned way back in the day with One Up Yours is it has to come out on the same day by roughly the same time, and you need something familiar. So at least the host needs to be the same, or if it's the same people. But you have a pattern as well, where it's like people know it's going to be four topics, and it's going to be, I mean, it's that you need to be, I mean, it's weird, you have to be comfortable, and I think that's what it is. So what I want to find out is what people want, and then try and find something comforting that we can put out, because I don't just want to do, like, here's the GamePro podcast and it's me and two or three other dudes just talking.
So this is their chance. This is, rather than bitch about it after you make the podcast, this is preemptive strike.
Yeah,
tell them what you guys want to hear. What would you want out of one? Leave it in our comments section, and you guys can do something productive. Get to work. What's wrong with you guys? Now they're not going to listen to us. They're going to listen to that jerk anymore. Bitmob. We'll go John Reese Nice. He likes us. All right. I think we better end this before I say something even worse. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks. Bye.